This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about a number of issues in family law, but we're going to start with a recent California Supreme Court case defining separation of spouses for the determination of earnings as to community or separate, and we'll give you more information. It's a very complicated case, and frankly, I feel that you might find it very interesting. My guest is B.J. Fathom, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar with law offices in San Jose. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funders of the program are the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. B.J., great to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. Give us a brief summary, if you would, of this new California Supreme Court case, Davis v. Davis.
Yeah, it's out of the California Supreme Court, and it's essentially been turning family lawyers upside down on it. So, first of all, what it applies to is defining what is the date of separation of two parties. And why is that important is the fact that we're a community property state. But what does that mean? That means that any earnings or assets that people acquire from the date of marriage to whatever that date of separation is community, and that's what gets divided. So your earnings don't become your separate property until you've, quote-unquote, separated. So what does that mean? Well, the California Supreme Court just came down a couple of weeks ago with a definition of what does that mean. And the biggest issue that came out of it is that means somebody has to move out of the house. You cannot live under the same roof any longer. That's the first prong to the test. And in California, that's creating a lot of chaos because we all know with the cost of living in California and for other reasons, we have a lot of people that may be separated that may have moved into the other bedroom. They intend that the marriage is going to dissolve. And they're still living under the same roof. Well, what the California Supreme Court case said now, no, you're not separated yet. And what's important in Davis is she even filed a petition for divorce, but she hadn't moved out. The California Supreme Court said, you're not separated.
This is, the significance of this was she had a business, did she not?
Husband bought a business in 2001. He started a business, right.
I see. And the issue of separation or the lack of separation was because if they didn't separate, then it was still community property. Is that right?
Correct. And then they both got jobs after the business, and she had gotten a higher paying job. And so,
and she wanted it as separate property, her earnings, right?
She wanted all the earnings from that new job to be her separate property. And so she filed for divorce in 2008, but she was still living in the house.
So then, because they were still living in the house, under the definition of separation, they were not separated.
They were not separated, and therefore, both of their earnings continued to be community. Even if they had a joint account also. They had separate accounts, and husband would put some money into the joint account for, you know, not really support. They didn't label it support, but to contribute to the living expenses because they were still in the same house with the children. But she didn't move out till 2011. And so the California Supreme Court said that their date of separation was 2011 when she moved out, which was years after she filed for divorce.
It was 3 years afterwards.
Absolutely.
So in other words, her earnings, whenever she started with her job, really, the earnings that she had accumulated were community property.
Exactly. Any stock options she may have gained, any retirement she may have vested.
All community.
Anything she purchased with those earnings, all community.
One of the things as I read the case, because you brought this to my attention some weeks ago, and I read the case, we have in California, we have something called prenuptial agreements.
Yes.
Where before people get married, they can agree, well, I'm going to keep my separate property, what my earnings are my separate property, what your earnings are your separate property, even if we get married. Is that something that can be agreed to in a prenuptial agreement?
Yes, absolutely. We do prenups in our office all the time.
So here we are, where you can do this. These people for a prenuptial agreement are not yet married, but when they get married, that prenuptial agreement still is the law between these two people.
As long as they comply.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So what I wondered on this case was if Mrs. Davis and Mr. Davis, while they're still living together in the house, and she's already filed a petition, but according to the family code, they're not separated because they're still living under the same roof.
Correct.
What I had wondered, if you would talk about this very briefly, if they had entered into a separate agreement saying, okay, we're still going to live in our house together, but your earnings in your new job, Mrs. Davis, my wife, are going to be your separate property and my earnings are going to be mine. Could they have done that and gotten away with it?
That's a postnuptial.
And
yes. They could possibly get away with the postnuptial if they define it properly. But what was interesting is the Davis case, the California Supreme Court justices took a look at another case called Umphreys, where they tried post-separation to have an agreement saying, we're saying our date of separation is this. So they had an agreement as to trying to define the date of separation. And the California Supreme Court in that the Umphreys case said, well, no, they didn't go by that date of separation because they're saying there were other factors that didn't show that there was a real breakdown of the marital relationship where there was an intent to do that and a living under separate roofs. So you can do a postnuptial but they're even harder. It's more strict than a prenuptial to define that we're going to say it's my separate property.
Yes.
But if you try and do an agreement to try and define the date of separation, what Davis is saying, you may or may not be able to do that because in Umphreys it didn't pass the sniff test for them.
Is this a common problem, or has it been in your practice a common problem of people having, because of the economy of things, it's not easy for one party to move out and the other party stays in the house because housing or renting property is so expensive? Is this a common problem that has existed of people not being truly separated because they have to still live in the house?
Absolutely.
Really?
We have had numerous cases where they come to us months, years after they've been what they believe is to be separated, where one has moved into another bedroom. And that's what the Davis case was.
Yeah.
They said one moved into this other bedroom, and as far as they were concerned, they were separated.
Incredible. Incredible. You know, we are live in the Bay Area on the internet at www.klw.org, and we're also live on the NPR public radio satellite. The first half hour is, as I've talked with you before on this, BJ, first half hour is the statewide version, which we record and we send out to other stations that air that next week. One of the things that I want to let all the listeners know about is we do on a regular basis, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month, Call a Lawyer Night, where people can call in and talk with the attorneys off the air. And so in a minute or so, I'm going to, for the local, or at least the California and the audience that's listening to the program live, I'm going to give the Call a Lawyer number so that they can call in. So for those of you who are listening to this program live, you'll understand that we are doing it live and you can call in and speak to a lawyer off the air. We have a number of them, actually 10 in the conference room here. And we're doing this program, by the way, on August 26th. And I'll let you know about that, and you can call in and talk with attorneys off the air. One of the things I think that you are concerned about, before I do give the local number, one of the things you are concerned about is because of this situation where one party or both parties have to stay in the home is going to perhaps be a problem of domestic violence. Is that right?
Yes. Here's the problem that I can see a lot of the advocates regarding domestic violence are already speaking up. So what happens in California, we have another problem, another layer to this whole situation, is that under the statute in the California Family Law Code, you cannot get what we call exclusive possession of the house or the family residence absent a showing of either domestic violence or threat of domestic violence. So what happens is, and it could even be one spouse's separate property is the house. But if it's the family residence, you cannot kick the other party out unless there is an actual domestic violence or threat of it.
Or they feign it.
Right, or and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have these situations that a lot of lawyers advise their clients don't move out of the family residence, especially if there's children, because you're going to lose your status as a parent, possibly. You set a precedent
for the custody.
For the custody. Absolutely.
It is our Call a Lawyer night for those of you who are listening to us live on August 26th. And the number is 1-800-525-9917. We have a number of attorneys here and in the area of workers' compensation, criminal law, legal malpractice law, family law, bankruptcy law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate law, patent law, aviation law, lemon law. And so if you want to talk to an attorney off the air, no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service these attorneys are performing. We do it every month. It's 1-800-525-9917. And for those of you who are listening to the program live, I'll give you our toll-free number also, and you can call in about 20 minutes or so. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. And we are doing a program on family law. We're talking about Davis v. Davis, which is a recent case dealing with the issue of when parties become separate and therefore whether or not earnings or property becomes community or separate or lots of issues. My guest is a very experienced attorney in the area of family law, B.J. Fathom, and BJ is a specialist in family law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. BJ, this whole thing, that this case, Davis versus Davis, they went back to 1852. Briefly, what
Absolutely.
Was the whole point of 1852?
Well, what they did is the California Supreme Court, they did a complete analysis of what does the statute mean? Because what they did was, the bottom line is they were looking at, they had to define what it meant in the statute as to what is the date of separation for community property. So what they wanted to find out is, what was the legislative intent? So to do that, they went back all the way to 1852, which really started to outline the beginning of women's rights, property rights, because back then, women, married women, had no right to their property. They weren't allowed to manage it.
It was all their husbands, right?
Absolutely. They had no separate property themselves, mm-hmm. and if it was their separate property, as long as they were married, it was managed by the husband. So in 1852, they finally, the very first cusp of it was that women were allowed to run their own business. That was a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1853, they finally said, well, if you get property bequeathed to you, meaning you inherit it, or it's given to you as a gift. Let's say they inherit the homestead from their parents or whatever, and that, or a business from their parents, and that generates income. In those cases, then they could be applied for their sole and separate use. It wasn't going to automatically be community. And that was the law in 1853. So it started to evolve. And then they went to 1855, where they said, well, if a married woman, if a husband leaves her for a year, then she has a right to convey her own separate property. So it started to develop until it got to the 1870 Act. And that's when they started to define that women, under certain circumstances, if they are living separate and apart from their husbands, could have their own separate income and earnings. And so what the California Supreme Court did in the Davis analysis was, what did that mean? Well, in that case, the intent was they're no longer living under the same roof as the husband. And that's how the analysis came forward. And they said, that's a legislative intent with the way we have written our statute. And they kept going back to, it's the way the statute's written. It's the intent of the statute, not talking about the spirit of the law or how that's really pragmatically going to affect, but really just defining how have we gone through the legislation. And then they went through all the way through the 1960s, the 70s, and through many, many more cases until they got to, it's going to be this two-pronged test, and you have to have both. One is you have to be living separate and apart, meaning not under the same roof, and you have to show by objective evidence of words and conduct that reflect that there's a complete and final break in the marital relationship.
How do you show that?
They went all over the board with mm-hmm. that, but it has to be an intent that the marital relationship is completely broken down. Mm-hmm. So in one case that they were talking about, they pointed to the fact, well, they were still kind of trying to reconcile. Mm-hmm. They didn't really reconcile, but mm-hmm. they were trying. There wasn't a final break yet. Mm-hmm. So it has to have both of those mm-hmm. elements. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting, and you and I were talking about this, leave it to our court system, the whole intent of Davis was we want a bright line to define what is the date of separation. So they go through this whole thing and say you have to have living under a separate roof and you have to have a complete breakdown of the marital relationship. But then in a footnote, yeah, but there may be some circumstances where this may not apply and you could still have a date of separation, and then doesn't give us any guideline to that.
What is being done now by, if any, by attorneys, family law attorneys, to try to perhaps get the legislature to amend the family law section, code section dealing with this? Is there any move afront at this point?
I'm hearing the grumblings.
And
that's exactly the California Supreme Court. I mean, they invited us. It was like the writing was on the wall. They even said it is up to the legislature to craft. In other words, we're only following what you guys drafted. Mm-hmm. You need to amend it if you want to change this. So they were like inviting and almost begging legislation to be amended.
What I have found to be a particular concern is obviously if a married couple have a child or children, and one decides, I can't stand to live with you anymore, I've got to move out, that will possibly affect the right of custody.
Absolutely.
And why? Why would that be?
Because what happens in our court system, whether we like it or not, is that you set a precedent with children. And the longer that the children are used to a particular parenting schedule, the harder it is to change that with children, and especially the smaller children.
Mm-hmm.
So you have maybe a primary caregiver, and it's not in the children's best interest to remove that primary caregiver or to change it up, or you have somebody that hasn't really been involved as much with the children. Mm-hmm. They're not automatically going to throw young children with them on an equal timeshare.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not in the children's best interest. And so it's not unusual when people are getting a divorce that there are family law attorneys that will advise their clients, don't leave the house. You're going to lose the precedent of who gets primary custody of the children.
Wow. Wow.
And so there's this battle, and it's going to take place under the roof. And believe me, children can feel the tension.
I bet they can.
Absolutely.
I bet they can feel the tension. It must be dreadful. Family law, I think, in my experience as a lawyer, and I have not been a family lawyer, although many, many years ago I had a couple of cases down in Los Angeles when I was down there. But I have found in certainly my personal experience and talking with family lawyers and observing what's going on, it is one of the most difficult areas of the law to practice in because of the emotional problems of your client or your client and the opposing client, et cetera. Do you find that true?
Absolutely. And a lot of family lawyers suffer from what they call vicarious stress from the client because you've got to be careful not to take it on. But it was interesting. My mentor, who was a certified specialist for years, had taught me early on, my former partner, was that it's one of the only areas of the law that you're asking parties mm-hmm. to take an emotional, romantic relationship.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden break it down to just business partnership. I mean, there's no other area of the law that's like that. And it is very hard. And the other thing that I notice, and I talk to my clients about this every time I get a new case, is that one of the parties have already emotionally left the relationship way before the other one.
Oh, sure.
And then
sure.
the other one has to catch up.
Yeah. Terribly difficult. What's your feeling about mediation of family law cases?
All for it. If especially when you have issues regarding custody, if the parties can come to an agreement, that's the best for them, because otherwise you're going to have a judge that really doesn't know either one of you or your children or your property or how your relationship was is going to dictate it to you. However, with mediation, you've got to remember that that mediator is not representing either one of you. So I always advise people, and I do mediation myself, but I will tell people that come to me for mediation, you should also consult your own individual attorneys. You should know what your rights are, what your obligations
because
are.
Because you as a mediator of a family law case cannot give advice to either party. Is that right?
Exactly. I am just there to mediate and reduce it to writing if we can come to an agreement.
This is our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of attorneys here, and I will let you know who they are in a few minutes. But we have a broad range of topics, so I welcome you to call in 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We are doing this on August 26th. Should you get this program somehow later, Call a Lawyer will not exist if it's not August 26th. So that number, 1-800-525-9917. The areas are patent law, aviation law, lemon law, tax law, real estate, employment law, landlord-tenant law, bankruptcy law, family law, legal malpractice law, criminal law, and workers' compensation law. Again, 1-800-525-9917. And in a few minutes, if you'd like to talk with my guest, B.J. Fathom, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on family law. We started talking, first of all, about a recent California Supreme Court case came down, a couple of weeks ago?
Just a couple of weeks ago, yes.
Davis v. Davis before the California Supreme Court. This doesn't necessarily indicate that this is the law in any other state, but this is what's going on in California. If you've tuned in a little bit late, my guest is B.J. Fathom, who is a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And so in that, we've got a few more minutes of the statewide version of the program, which we record and then we send out to other stations in California, which air that first half hour next week. What other issues with respect to this case, Davis v. Davis, that we haven't even touched upon that you'd like to include in the first half hour of the program?
Well, I think the other thing that's important is a lot of parties that are divorcing, especially when they're trying to do it somewhat amicably, and they have children, they try and do that transition slowly so they don't move out right away. They have an agreement that they're not going to move out right away. And they need to be aware of this new case because I'll get them coming into my office that they've been doing this transition for maybe 6 months, maybe a year or more. And they say, well, we were separated, you know, back last year or 2 years ago. It's now time that we're ready to move on with our divorce. The kids are finally transitioning.
And one move out of the house, one will stay in the house or whatever.
Right. And the most important thing is a lot of them can't move out until they've decided how to separate out the finances.
Yeah.
So they know where can they live, how can they keep two separate households. Well, people need to know that they better do something different about that because it's all still community. Mm-hmm. So all of this whole time that they may have been living under the same roof for the children or for finances or whatever, thinking that they're establishing their separate accounts and they're establishing their separate property, they may not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been living under the same roof and Davis is now saying it's not good enough.
Wow. Incredible. We now have, of course, in the United States, same-sex marriage, which has the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled is the right to constitutionally the right to have a same-sex marriage honored by the states. How would this, if at all, be affected? There wouldn't be any difference, would it?
There would be absolutely no difference, but I can see how the dynamics might be different, especially when you apply the domestic violence issue to it. Because you might have, especially if you have children, and one party may have been the primary caregiver, and in a lot of cases, especially more with the same-sex marriages, one party may have owned the house before, so it is their separate property. and they don't realize that they may be incurring more of a community interest in that house because they're living under the same roof. They continue, their earnings continue to be community property. And so as you pay down that mortgage,
mm-hmm.
you're giving the community more and more of an interest. So they may believe that they're separate, and so therefore they cut off the community interest in that property, but they're not. With Davis now, it may be continuing.
So in other words, if someone, whether it's a same-sex marriage or if it's a heterosexual marriage, if someone has a home in his or her name only,
right,
gets married, but the mortgage still exists,
yes,
and there's payments being made after the marriage, that then has, as far as California is concerned, that then has issues of community property interest in that property. Is that right?
Absolutely. We call it a Moore Marsden analysis. It's named after some landmark cases. But what it says is essentially that the pay down of that principal from the community earnings of either party or both, as you, once you get married and you continue to pay that mortgage and you're paying on the principal,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's not interest only, but you're paying on mm-hmm. the principal, you're creating an interest in the community for that house. So it still may be one partner's separate property, but there's a community interest. And as long as you continue to live together now under that same roof, you may not be separated, and so that community interest is going to grow more than you thought it was.
If someone has a owns a home separately, although there may be a mortgage, but the property is in the name of only one person to the marriage, are you saying under Davis v. Davis that person cannot say, I want you, whose name is not on the title of the property, I want you out of the house?
Absolutely, and I had that case. Because it's the family residence. It doesn't matter, and they don't determine early on in the litigation what is separate property. But even if it's clearly separate property, under the family code, unless you can show domestic violence or threat of domestic violence, you don't get exclusive possession of the quote-unquote family residence.
Even though it's in your name only.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I had this exact case, and they were stuck under the same roof.
And they had to be stuck until when?
Until we finally resolved the financial issues and one finally agreed to move out. And I'll tell you, in that case, what the stickler was resolving the custody and visitation issues before one partner moved out.
All right. It is the beginning of what I want to include you to join us with your questions on the air, if you'd like to call in. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Again, that's a toll-free number wherever you are in the United States. If you're listening to us either on the internet at www.klw.org, if you're listening to us live on the public radio satellite, it's 866-798-8255. We're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, August 26th. And if you are interested in speaking to any one of our attorneys for Call a Lawyer Night, which we do every month, usually on the fourth Wednesday of the month, that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Let me tell you who is here for Call a Lawyer. And by the way, there's no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service these attorneys are performing. Most of them who are here at the station, KALW in San Francisco, have done this, some of these people, for years. So here's who we have. For workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan, who's a certified specialist in that area. For criminal law, Jeff Hayden is a certified specialist. Jeff is also, by the way, the president of the San Mateo County Bar Association. For legal malpractice law, certified specialist Peter Fortune. For family law, I don't think she's here, and I think it's my mistake. Janet Lee Frankel, who's a certified specialist, I should have called her, and I didn't. And Janet, if you're listening, I apologize for not calling you. We do have another family law attorney, Ronald Nerio. It's Ronald's first time being here. For bankruptcy law, we have Patricia Zerbini. For landlord-tenant law, we have Sal Timpano. For employment law, we have Tahi Astanehi. for tax law, real estate, and he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. For patent law, aviation law, and lemon law, we have Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, Thursday, August 27th, if you'd like, you can speak to Leon Bayer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. He'll be available from 8 a.m. to noon. That's California time. And that number, 800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and the line is busy, leave a message. Give him your name and phone number and say you listen to Your Legal Rights, and he'll call you back. So that's available for those of you listening to the program live. For Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917. For On the Air, if you want to speak to my guest, B.J. Fathom, it's 866-798-8255. And for those of you who've tuned in a little bit late, we're doing a program on family law, having talked about a very recent California Supreme Court case, Davis v. Davis, that deals with what determines the separation of parties, which is very relevant to whether or not earnings continue to be community property or separate property. My guest is B.J. Fathom, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in San Jose. So we're going to take some calls. We're going to start with Alyssa. Welcome to Your Legal Rights, Alyssa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Your guest has been very helpful sort of in deepening my understanding of what community property means here in California, but it might be helpful, this is a really simple question, but what's the alternative to community property in other states, and what does that look like?
Oh, my. good question, Alyssa.
It's a very good question, and actually I do a lot of jurisdiction stuff around the world. So most states, I will say, are following community property, but there are several states that, for example, in Florida, it's what we call an equality state. So what they feel is equitable between the parties. So they don't come right out and say 50-50 as a community property. It's more or less what's equitable. And unfortunately, in some of the southern states, you still have where it's more the husband has more of the property rights, especially when it comes to real property. And especially in those states, what happens is we have a no-fault state. So if one party wants to get a divorce, you get one. In those states, especially southern, you have to show adultery or something or a reason for the divorce. And that affects the property rights and can change from – and that is a factor to consider in what is equitable in the division of property.
Really?
Absolutely. So all of these – that's where you get these juicy – trials where people bring in about the affairs and things like that. We're in California here for most of the part. We don't really care.
It's irrelevant.
Absolutely.
It's irrelevant. I see. Does that help you, Alyssa?
It does. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks very much
for calling.
I certainly appreciate your calling. Again, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Before we take our next call, support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, California, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, of course, during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you are in any other county in California, and I do not have this information for the rest of the country, of course, but if you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, tell them what the problem is, and they will find someone who's experienced in your area that you're having the problem in, set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney, and with minor exception, you will pay for a half an hour consultation with the attorney somewhere between $25 to $35. It's a great public service. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that fine service going throughout California. So that's what's going on there. And we have now Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I don't know if I'm in the right territory here. I was married to another U.S. citizen in Cuba years ago, and due to their two countries' diplomatic relations problem, I was not sure how my marriage was as far as legal status in the United States. Now I've gone on to other relations, and people want to know what gives. Am I still legally married, and how does it work with property and so forth?
So in other words, wait a minute. You married a U.S. citizen.
In Cuba.
In Cuba. And you are a U.S. citizen, is that right?
Yes, sir.
But where's your former wife?
In the United States, and we're strange now, and that's not the happening anymore. I've moved on, and now the new woman wants to know what gives. I can't even prove I was married because, everything was so difficult with the relations between the two countries.
I see.
I was married in church, by the way. I can't even, when I was trying to get things together for hospitalization and whatnot, I couldn't prove we were married. Now, I don't know how it works with divorce or
Joe, let me ask you something. Joe, you and your wife, who you're estranged from, lived in the United States for a while, did you not?
Oh, yes. We're both long-term U.S. citizens.
Did you file a joint tax return?
No.
Oh, you did not?
No. We felt that we were, due to the estrangement between the two nations, that we're not really...
Ah.
It's like being married to someone from another planet at that time, and now, of course, relations are being resumed.
Well, very interesting. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this, BJ?
Well, my thought would be under California law, if you followed the legal requirements in Cuba to be legally married under Cuban law, and their marital requirements are somewhat similar to California. In other words, California will acknowledge any legal marriages from any other country. Where they don't acknowledge it is, for example, like in California, we don't have common law marriages. So in Texas, if it was a common law marriage, it's not a legal marriage in California, where it is in Texas. Mm. But when it comes to other countries, if it follows within the qualifications of California, California will acknowledge the marriage. So the question would be, did you comply with the legal requirements of Cuba to be legally married under Cuban law?
I'm pretty sure we did, because we were married in a big church and so forth, a public event. Although, when I tried here to work the system properly for hospitalization, for medical plans and so forth, I could not prove that we were married, and I couldn't contact Cuba. I kept trying, but the mail service just didn't work between the two countries. As I say, it was like being on another planet.
Right.
And I don't know where I stand.
So you didn't have like a marriage certificate that you still had possession of?
No, I kept asking them for Xerox, and things were just so impossible. I just never got a reply.
Did you, when you were married in the church in Cuba, Joe, you did not get any kind of document from whomever performed the marriage? Pardon?
Well, and it's weird. We signed five documents as if it was an international treaty.
I see.
We made a big production out of it, and yet I never got up a single paper.
Very interesting. What county are you in?
I'm sorry?
What county are you in?
Oh, Contra Costa.
You're where, Per?
Contra Costa.
Oh, Contra Costa.
Oh, Contra Costa, yeah. Have you seen an attorney at all, a family law attorney, to discuss this?
No, I don't know how much that would cost.
Well, hey, you have a lady now who wants to find out if you're married because she'd like to marry you. Is that right?
Yeah, and I, in one way, would I be a bigamist?
Well, hey, I think you need to do a little good thinking about this. My suggestion is, to start with, if you would, my suggestion is what you might want to do is contact the Contra Costa County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. See if you can't get an appointment with a family law practitioner for half an hour. I mean, you can possibly afford $35, can't you?
Yeah, Oh, yes, sir. That sounds great.
Well, it's a start, Joe, and I think you really need to do it. Now with the relationship between Cuba and the United States, it may be that you'll have a better opportunity of getting some kind of a document to help you determine what your next step should be. Certainly, you don't want to be in a position of possibly being charged with bigamy. I don't want to make this sound too serious, but I do think at this point, in that you have met someone who is interested in getting married to you, you need to take the next step. So I suggest you contact at least the Contra Costa Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and see if you can't start by having a consultation, at least a half an hour consultation with an attorney.
Well, that is a great tip. Yeah, these foreign relations are affecting my domestic relations.
Okay, and it may be, Joe, that the issue becomes, well, the only way you're going to get this clarified, Joe, is that you've got to take a trip to Cuba with the lady who wants to be your wife, and there you go, you got a trip to Cuba, Joe.
Oh, goodness. I knew it cost more than $35.
Yeah, now that will cost you more than $35. But thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. I hope you follow through on this. All right, our toll-free number again on the live program. This is August 26, 866-798-8255. We also have Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And, Joe, if you're interested, you certainly can also call and speak with Ron Nerio, N-E-R-I-O, who is a family lawyer who's here for Call a Lawyer. And I think I dropped the ball on this. Janet Lee Frankel was a guest of mine a couple of weeks ago, and I told Janet about this, that we were going to do this program on family law, and she and I agreed that she would come, and I unfortunately told her, I'll call you to remind you. Well, I forgot, and I apologize. But also Janet Lee Frankel, actually, Alice O'Sullivan is here, and if you call our 1-800-525-9917, Alice will take down your name and phone number, and you can call Janet, who I think would be happy to talk with you, even though it won't be tonight. Janet has done that before. So good luck to you, and for those of you who'd like to talk with my guest, B.J. Fathom, the number again, toll-free, 866-798-8255. Again, for those of you who are being hounded by creditors, aside from the fact that we have Patricia Zerbini here, who practices bankruptcy law, and you can call her this evening, 1-800-525-9917. Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, will be available tomorrow. That's Thursday, August 27th, at 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111 between 8 a.m. and noon. This is California Pacific time. And if you call and you get, the voicemail, leave your name and phone number and that you're a listener of Your Legal Rights, and Mr. Baer will call you back. So, all right, we have right now Marilyn. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I didn't know I had so many cousin lawyers, even with that same last name that I have.
What is your last name, Marilyn?
Well, I pronounce it Fathom.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Actually, yeah, we're probably related.
Really?
All the Fathoms are related,
No kidding. Well, Marilyn, what's your question?
Well, I have a lot of separate property, and so I thought that was okay. But then it turns out that it's not, because this is an elder law issue in which my husband has dementia. And so I could have to use my separate property to pay for him, I'm told.
So you are legally married to your husband, is that correct?
Yes, and if he had to be institutionalized and stuff, then I would, have to get rid of all my stuff and pay for him, because I guess if you have dementia, separate property doesn't count anymore, sort of like this same case that we're discussing.
Does your husband have Medicare?
Well, he has Social Security, and of course he has Medicare. We both have Kaiser. I make sure of that.
Okay.
But that is not long-term care.
Okay. So you do not have, neither of you has long-term care insurance. Is that correct?
Right.
What comments do you have on this, BJ?
I know exactly what she's talking about. It's under the code section where, because you're still married, you have an obligation to support your spouse financially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's what they're pointing to. You call it elder law, but it really is still under the family code. But because the family code applies not just to people that are getting divorced, but during the marriage itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're pointing to, Marilyn, is that because you are married, you are legally obligated to continue to financially support your husband. And one of the things that I started doing years ago, this became a problem because even senior citizens couldn't live on the one Social Security. So what we were doing in a lot of instances for the senior citizens, and this is another reason why they've kept the Domestic Partnership Act going for senior citizens, mm-hmm. is that we would get a divorce for them, and then we would create a domestic partnership type of package for them, so they really were going to continue living together in that case, but they were no longer married. They were actually divorced. And based on that, then they were still entitled to their Social Security because they're not married.
Sure.
They don't get the joint Social Security. And also, from the Medicare standpoint, they could only take into consideration the one partner.
Mm.
What you have to be careful of now is because the Domestic Partnership Act has now raised the legal rights of registered domestic partners
mm-hmm.
to the same as married.
Yes.
under California law, but
yeah.
not under federal law.
Oh, really? Really?
So, right.
Oh, okay.
Because you have same-sex marriages. So if you're married under federal law, you're the same because DOMA failed.
Yeah.
But if you're still just domestic partnership, then federal is not. That's still a state-by-state.
What would you recommend that Marilyn do at this point? What should be her next step to determine? By the way, Marilyn, have you talked to a lawyer?
No, I haven't. But also, I have my husband's Social Security because I work for the city of San Francisco, and they don't, as a part-time worker, and they don't tell you that you had to pay into your own Social Security.
Mm.
You never did.
Oh, really? Wow.
Right.
So all you have is your husband's Social Security available to you at
That's
some point.
So I get Medicare through
okay.
my
Okay. So you are covered by Medicare, as is your husband. Is that right?
Right.
What would you recommend to Marilyn to do at this point? What should be her next step to determine exactly, or as best she can, what course she needs to take, if any?
I would at this point see a lawyer, and I would look into an estate planning lawyer first
yeah.
about maybe looking into creating a particular type of trust for your separate property.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it would not hurt to talk to a family lawyer about what your legal rights could be, how you can maybe, you know, set up a situation that maybe you're not legally married to them, but that there's, you know, there's going to be downfalls to that too. But there's different, I think you need to explore all the different possibilities. But first, I would go and talk to an estate planning lawyer about maybe putting together a trust.
Marilyn, I want to let you know about something else that's going to happen next week, coincidentally, which you might find interesting and of some value for you. We're going to be talking about the State Bar of California's publication guide entitled Seniors and the Law, a Guide for Maturing Californians, which I will let you know next week how you can get it. This is something that is published by the State Bar of California, funded by the California Bar Foundation. My guests on the air will be two specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Colleen McAvoy and Peter Stern. They're certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. We will not have, of course, on the air time to give you, or my guests will not have time to give you specific legal advice, and the State Bar doesn't permit them to do that. But you may find next week's program to be of some help to you. And also, if you want to get a copy of Seniors and the Law, it may be helpful for you to read that. One other thing that I suggest that you might want to do, frankly, and start thinking seriously about this, you might want... Where do you live, by the way?
San Francisco.
Yeah. You might want to call the Board of Legal Specialization, and I'll give you that phone number, and I'll also give you the website to find out who the certified specialists in estate planning are in San Francisco, and maybe select one to at least have an initial consultation. The Board of Legal Specialization, do you have something to write with?
Yes.
Yeah. Board of Legal Specialization's statewide number, by the way, is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. Also, if you do you have a computer and have access to the internet?
I just mostly use the library.
Do you? Okay. Well, let me give you the website for the state bar and the Board of Legal Specialization. If you'll write this down, www.calbar.ca.gov, www.calbar.ca.gov, and then go to the left of the screen to the section, a couple of words that say legal specialists. If you click that on and put in San Francisco, it'll tell you who the certified specialists are in estate planning, and you might want to jot down some names and phone numbers and find out how you might start with an initial consultation. So you've got my program next week, which is going to be September 2nd, and then you now have an access to the Board of Legal Specialization, and I hope that's of some help to you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, good luck to you. Take care. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right. Again, it's Call a Lawyer Night. We have a few minutes left with the attorneys here. They're talking to each other. I don't like to see that. I like them to be talking to you on the phone. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Sorry, tripping on myself. And if you'd like to talk to my guest on the air, B.J. Fathom, or how do you do? Fathom.
Fathom.
Pardon me. I have mispronounced it.
No, half the family goes by Fathom,
go
by Fathom.
Oh,
but they're all related.
Fathom. That toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We're doing this program live on August 26th. Let me thank the attorneys who are here talking with you off the air in the conference room for Call a Lawyer, Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization for Workers' Comp, Jeff Hayden, president of the San Mateo County Bar Association, certified specialist in criminal law, Peter Fortune, certified specialist in legal malpractice law, Ron Nerio, family law attorney, Patricia Zerbini, bankruptcy law attorney, Sal Timpano, landlord-tenant attorney, Dai Astanehi, employment law attorney, Frank Adam, real estate, tax law, real property attorney, Frank Adam, Ron Rohde, patent law, aviation, lemon law, and again tomorrow, if you're being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available from 8 a.m. to noon, California time, 800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. We have a few minutes left, on the program, BJ. What further thoughts would you like people to know about in the family law area?
In the family law area. I mean, I think the biggest thing is it's a growing area, and it's becoming a difficult area, the combination of with property and with children. And this new case is just an indication. It's a tip of the iceberg of what's going on with property. The bottom line is a lot of people don't think about data separation, but I've had more trials just over the data separation because you cannot resolve the rest of your financial situation and get everything distributed and characterized and get it finalized without knowing what the data separation is.
Mm-hmm.
It affects everything as far as the financial situation. It affects when support starts, when you can deduct support under your taxes, all of that. The data separation is going to apply to
everything.
That's
really critical.
It's very critical.
So if someone moves out and they're living in separate houses, but they haven't filed a petition for dissolution of marriage and under California law, how is that considered separation or not?
Under Davis, it may not.
It may not.
Because Davis says you've got to have this secondary prong to the test.
Yeah.
That there's a complete
marital
breakdown.
So even though you may move out of the house, if you haven't filed a petition or shown something that will convince the court that you really are separated.
According to Davis, yeah.
That's a problem. So be careful. And of course, the fact of if you move out of the house and you've got young children, and you want to protect your custody rights with your children, you got to be careful about that.
Absolutely. So Davis was supposed to give us a bright line, and I think it just got us a little murky.
A fuzzy bright line. And it's really, frankly. Some people have said that family law is easy. In my experience, having done it a little bit at the beginning of my career, it is one of the most difficult areas of the law. In many cases, having spent 30 years as a deputy district attorney for San Mateo County, although I did not do homicide prosecution or rape cases or that kind of stuff, I found family law to be one of the most difficult areas of the law, primarily because of the emotional problems of the clients, both my client and the opposing client. Someone has brought in, oh my, okay, this will be the last question because we're about to end the program in just a minute. My mother has received a substantial amount of money from her deceased sister. She wants to gift the money to me and my sister. Can she do this without her husband's permission? Is this inheritance her separate property? What thoughts do you have on that?
Absolutely, yes. As long as she keeps it separate. So if she gets that inheritance, put it in an account separately under her name. Don't commingle it, mix it with any other assets. And then if she gifts it to you or your sister, you keep it separate. If you're married, you want to keep it in a separate account, because then we're getting into a whole new area called transmutation,
yes,
meaning changing the characterization. So as long as she takes it, keeps it separate, gifts it to you, and you keep it separate, you can maintain the separate property.
So there you are. There you are. And my suggestion also would be for you who have called in. I don't have your name. I think it would be very wise for you or whomever you're working with, your family member, your mother, to actually make an appointment to meet with an estate planning attorney. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And it wouldn't even hurt with a family law attorney and have them work hand in hand.
It's worth it for you to try to take the time and maybe spend a little money to find out what really will work. Well, BJ, it's been wonderful having you on the program again.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us. BJ Fadum, whichever pronunciation you prefer, is a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. His offices are in San Jose. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
By the way, next week, as I was telling Marilyn, the topic will be, we're going to be having a discussion of the State Bar's publication, Seniors and the Law, which is a guide for maturing Californians. It's funded by the California Bar Foundation, published by the State Bar of California. My guests are Colleen McAvoy and Peter Stern. They're specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Joanne Marr, program engineer, and production assistant Mark McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding has been provided by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of this program. I thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time. I'm Chuck Finney.